Welcome to the Pro Wrestling Outsiders Show, where we have one-sided conversations and unsolicited opinions. Here's your host, Kyle Joseph.
Hello everyone, and bonjour tout le monde! Once again, this is Kyle here for the Pro Show, the show with one-sided conversations and unsolicited opinions. Today's show, we're going to talk again WWE, NXT, AEW, a couple of random things in that tail end program I still haven't figured out what to call. We do have WWE's Hell in a Cell coming up on Sunday, so we will have a bonus Side of Pro show on Saturday dropping just to go over that specific pay-per-view. So once again, thanks for coming around, thanks for sticking around, thanks for listening to me. After the break, it's WWE time. Hey everyone, thanks very much for sticking around. Alright, it's WWE time. We have the Hell in a Cell pay-per-view coming up this Sunday the 20th. Unfortunately, with the way that SmackDown comes on a Friday, it makes it a little harder to kind of get in that commentary during a regular scheduled release, which would be today, Thursday. By the time I produce this, it'll probably be Friday, but you get the gist. So what I'm going to do is on Saturday, before the show, I'm going to release a Side of Pro, as I coined the term, for our kind of impromptu or special edition podcast, and that way it's not a full thing. It'll focus just on Hell in the Cell. We'll go through the matches I'm looking forward to, the matches I'm not looking forward to, winners and all that stuff without going into too much detail as match by match and storyline by storyline. So I thought I would just kind of give out some rest of the conversation today as opposed to overloading everything on Saturday. So I was talking before about the cuts, the word on the street, like I know, but things I read, is that there'll be more cuts coming. Doesn't surprise me. There is definitely a massive roster out there that, when you're trying to make your business more attractive to shareholders, as I mentioned before, cutting down expenses. But what I was reading was that Braun Strowman, as to whatever he's going to call himself when he's done, apparently was asking between $20,000 and $25,000 per appearance. Now, I understand, given how much money he makes or made in the WWE, that I could correlate trying to recoup that money. Obviously, as you make more, you spend more, and you become comfortable with that certain intake. And so instead, you want to be able to, kind of make sure you're on the same page. But I can't imagine many people are going to spend between $20,000 and $25,000 for appearance, especially in this current situation in the world where you're just not going to get the volume of people to come to your event or to your convention or whatever it is that would cause you to want to bring Braun in for $25,000. So I'm sure that there'll be others in the same situation that aren't necessarily really meant to continue a wrestling career kind of on their own, whether it's because they haven't really developed that kind of love for it, or they don't have the same background where them going out of the indies is a lot harder. Enzo Amore is a prime example where his mouth got him to where he was, and then now that opportunity is gone, how do you carry yourself from there? So I'm interested to see if he does show up on another wrestling program, if he has the skills and the ability to really go out on his own. Only time will tell. But I was also reading an article, and it was an interesting thing surrounding these cuts, and the question came down to how Triple H felt about superstars who are brought up from NXT who don't work in the main space, and then as a result, a la some of these leasing cuts, they just get released. And he made an interesting point. He kind of compares it between collegiate and the pros of really any sport, is that you have people that you join your, you know, that come up from wherever they were before. So if you look at NXT as a product, just like college football, where you could look at college football as a standalone. You don't need to watch the NFL in order to enjoy college football. But you're going to take some people from college football and bring them up to the NFL. Same thing goes for hockey, baseball, whatever. Sometimes those athletes don't work out. Sometimes they're put in a position where it just isn't their time. It isn't their place, things that like that. And so you can't really go back necessarily to where you were before. So there are people that will have to flourish somewhere else. And it happens, right? You have somebody in the NFL who doesn't work out so well in the NFL, but maybe they go to the CFL and they perform well there. And that's kind of where they go. So there's lots of people that came from WWE that have moved on to other promotions and done quite well. So there is not to fear that will happen. And it was just an interesting idea that you look, if you look at more of a sport and less so much as a, I don't know what the right word is, but company view, however, I can't think of the term right now. But if you compare it directly to sport, this is an expected outcome that happens in sport all the time. When you look at some of the other people that are kind of floating around that could easily, you know, disappear. If you look at Bray still hasn't been on TV. There is, you know, kind of questions up in the air as to what to do with them. The Fiend, I think, worked really well at the beginning because it's so obscure. I don't know how long it would have lasted given how Vince is particular about abstract ideas. So if I look at it, like, we left at a good spot with Alexa Bliss kind of giving up on him and then Randy Orton winning, which I think was a really good storyline or rivalry because they fit well together both in the ring and kind of through their history. So I think that's, you know, really good. I just don't know where you take him from there if he's not going to run the show. I think they brought him out too much. I would have liked to have seen, because I really enjoyed the Firefly Funhouse. I think if you had focused more on that, had him come to matches as Bray Wyatt in this kind of goofy whatever, but act as an alter ego as the Fiend, almost like split personality. And I think you could have played that and ran it a little longer and allowed him to win. I think it was a bad idea to have him take a belt so quickly because then he's going to lose it at some point. The fact that he lost to Goldberg really, really, I think, hampers people's believability in that character, because if Goldberg can beat you, my God. But it made me think about, too, like Alexa Bliss. So when she got free of him, she came out of the box and she had this black crown, and then, you know, the black stuff was dripping down, and it was like, oh, this is really cool. This is different. What's it going to happen as a result? And we do see it, that specific clip again, whenever they kind of go through her whatever transformation, however you want to work it. But we haven't really seen it since. It's still this weird Alexa Bliss doll talking business, which is fine. I think she was better in the role with Bray Wyatt. And I think they could have kept going with that and bringing in other people into the Firefly Funhouse. And just like in a kind of a, almost like they did with John Cena, where they bring him into this environment, they don't really know what's going on, and they end up being part of this children's show, and it does, they feel out of place, or whatever the case may be. But I think they're trying to continue that with Alexa Bliss, and I'm not sure it really works. Finally, we got a kind of spooky, you know, horror house, or whatever you want to call it, with Shayna Baszler, and I'm happy to see Shayna continuing to move away from the way she was before. But it's just, then we had them in the ring, and it didn't work for me. I don't really buy into the way that Alexa Bliss is. It was better when she was kind of transforming between her regular self and this other character. She was trying to put the sleeper hold on people, and I've never been a believer of her finishing move off the top rope, Moment of Bliss, I think it's called, or whatever it is. But that's supposed to, I mean, she's like 80 pounds, and she does it to Nia Jax, and that's supposed to be it. I feel like if she had taken from The Fiend the Mandible Claw, I think that was that's really a good opportunity for her to be able to defeat these larger competitors and still carry this kind of fear and this kind of crazy storyline. But using the Mandible Claw doesn't require any sort of physical prowess to do it. And so this would have worked really well with her. I don't know where they're going to go from here. I don't quite understand what's going to happen. Am I interested? It's really going to depend on the day. I'm not overly invested in it, but if there's more stuff like what happened with Shayna Baszler, then at least it's something different and such. It kind of also, I mean, there's talk of like Nikki Cross. Would Nikki Cross be kind of Sister Abigail? Because she had that crazy thing when she came out of Sanity, which I thought she had a fantastic character. And then moving into this sidekick with Alexa Bliss and everything, I just don't think really fit. And then she was off TV for a while. Whatever the case may be, I think at some point in time she was ready and the storyline wasn't. But now she's coming across and she's kind of tied in with the Flair Ripley storyline. But to me, she's kind of seemed as a joke. And that the only way she's winning is getting people to count out or having somebody else help her. And I think she's better than that. I think she's got more to offer. I feel like she would be better suited, and had I, you know, mentioned last week about some secondary storylines, that this is where she would be at a good spot. She could be going against Naomi. She could be going against Mandy. That level of people where, yeah, sure, she's not at a stage where she's really has people behind her to win the, you know, the top belt, but at least she can partake in a way that doesn't make her seem like she's friggin' Leon Ruff, where it's just all for fun and games, but really you could take her or leave her. So hopefully at some point in time they will do more with her in a more positive light, because I never really like when they turn wrestlers into jokes. One of the other things I was, you know, we had the introduction of Eva Marie, which is never a good thing, personally, when you have her come out. I don't, her last stint didn't go well, at least it didn't end well. I don't care. I thought maybe she was going to end up being more of a bit of a reality show where she offers, you know, she's kind of a life coach. I could have bought into that, bringing her out to the ring with this quote unquote mysterious woman who's Piper Piven from, or I think it's the same, or Piper Piven from NXT UK. And that's who she's kind of managing. I wish they'd also reference her, because you're supposed to act like people watch your product and people know who Piper is. So why wouldn't you reference that? Don't act like she's a complete other person. Very similar to Commander Aziz, which I also take issue with, but that's neither here nor there. So I think there's opportunity there to really start focusing on women, not Eva Marie. At least she's not doing the all red everything. I will give it a little more time before I really tune out from that. Hopefully something will happen from it. That's more than the joke it was when she left. But it did get me thinking, and I think I read it somewhere too, is where are we with the evolution? We had this great pay-per-view that I think went well for the women. Women only. Worked well. We haven't seen anything since. We haven't really seen a Mae Young Classic in a while. Why aren't we seeing another Evolution pay-per-view? There's enough strong women to carry that. There's enough storylines you could build out that why couldn't you do another Evolution? And you could do it in the same, you know, facet that NXT has shown that they can do, even if you do it as a two-hour block, not necessarily on an NXT, but that level where you have, it doesn't have to be this grandiose giant arena, but you can still put on a fantastic show with fans. I think it's a great opportunity for young girls and young boys, for that matter, that you're seeing women in a position of power and they're really carrying their own, and it's not relying on men to be at the forefront. And so you know, there's opportunities there too that you could kind of do a little Survivor Series where you're pitting SmackDown and Raw and NXT and bringing NXT UK, and you can. We did War of the Worlds before between the two NXTs and 205 Live, I believe. So why not do that? I mean, you can have some fun with it. You're adding to the competition. You can use this as a platform to further build out your stories or start stories, but still celebrating the impact that women have on the business. And with Mae Young Classic, I always love them because I think it brings new people into perspective. You get a chance to really test out the waters with some of these wrestlers. So why not take that opportunity and, you know, make some money on some ticket sales? So, you know, that would be again, nice to see. When we look at the men, it's interesting because they'll pretty much be able to do anything they want, and it seems to work. And some of it is great. I will tell you that I am enjoying the RK-Bro. As I've said before, it is a bit of a challenge when you put them up against New Day because you're looking at two faces, and now Randy, because you can't hate New Day, nobody can hate them, that it forces Randy and Riddle to be more on the heel side. So that's, you know, it's unfortunate, but they have great merchandise. I do like when Riddle rocks the snake riding a scooter. I'm pretty sure I saw Randy with an RK-Bro logo on the training jacket, whatever you want to call it. And so I thought, like, that was great. They're getting into it. And so there's opportunities there for them to kind of continue it in a more, not serious manner, but more official manner. So we'll see where this goes. I think, you know, Randy's in a great spot. He is a mentor to the young guys, but yet he still performs. He still can stay at the top. You put him in a belt conversation and it's believable. You put him in a feud, he can feud with any of the top stars and it's all plausible. Less so much if you look at somebody like Edge, and that's partly because of his circumstances with his injury, partly because he looks like he's 900 years old, whereas Randy looks as young as everybody else. And he's still a fantastic. And funny enough, I was reading that even Jim Ross says he's the best in the business. And either serious or joking, Kenny Omega took issue to that. But I think when you look at it long term, or you're looking at the bigger picture, I don't see why not. He is probably in the most complete in terms of his in-ring ability, his mic ability, his ability to draw, his ability to bring up stars, and all that. So if you're looking at it from a holistic point of view, I can totally see why JR said that Randy is at that level. I mean, yes, you can put Kenny in there and you can, you know, put all those other people at the top echelon, but when you look at it as a complete perspective, I would say that Randy is in that spot. It's I've always felt that Chris Jericho is, in my opinion, it would be on my Mount Rushmore for longevity, for creativity, for his ability to move wrestlers into the spotlight. He had fantastic work as the Cruiserweights in WCW. He clearly continues to be the leader in AEW while he is, yes, obviously in the ring, not as where he used to be. He is way better than a bunch of those guys who are considerably younger at his age. Plus, his mic skills are still on point. He rips off some just fantastic promos. I think with MGF, it's easy because there's enough ammo. And I'm sure MGF just lets the door wide open to whatever he wants. So I think there's Jericho simply up there. But if I were to compare Jericho and Randy right now, in the moment, Randy, I feel like, is doing more for the wrestling business, at least specifically to WWE, that I could easily see him in the conversation to be best in the business. Speaking of New Day, I'm interested to see what happens with them and MVP. It's weird because I could see them joining with MVP if they're really going to try and turn them on the bad side again. I think from a marketing side of point and a money side of point, I don't think it would work really well, because all the kids love New Day. I just don't want to see, I mean, they split out Big E, which is fine, because he can run on his own as long as he's on a different show. And then when they come together for your pay-per-views, they're still there. They're still a team. They're still looking out for each other, even though they're not on the show together. I think it'd be really unfortunate if they push Xavier Woods to the side and out in the background and let him do his non-wrestling stuff and really push Kofi in with MVP. So I'm not too sure where they're going to go with this. I don't know if we're going to see a Kofi MVP match, or it's just a weird thing too, because it has nothing to do with Bobby Lashley outside of the matches to be the number one contender. So I don't know where they're going to go with this. I am intrigued, which is always good. You know, it's always good that you see something in a storyline, or you see the start of a storyline and you want to see what goes from there. Now, whether it continues to improve or it falls, you know, right off the cliff, that's neither here nor there when it first starts. So hopefully this will turn out to be something interesting and not just blowing up another tag team. I know I've said this before, specifically last week, that the Bobby Drew stuff kind of needs to come to an end, because there's only so many times that the same two wrestlers can wrestle without any change. I did get a good chuckle when Drew called him Trashley. Given the circumstance, him hanging out with his lady friends, however corny it was, because it was totally corny, but it was at the same time clever, and I can appreciate shitty jokes that are still clever. So I do applaud whoever came up with that. If it was Drew, good on him. If it was the writers, just as well. So when I think about, you know, what's left and what's been kind of going on as a tail end, I don't want to go in too much into Hell in a Cell specifically. I know Roman versus Rey is a really quick to the point for a pay-per-view. I feel like they're still trying to find the right person to go against Roman to keep him strong, but make them really, you know, top sellers. And so everyone loves Rey. It's an underdog story. I think it's pretty clear how it's going to go. I did think it was quick to go Hell in a Cell. I didn't think there was enough buildup to really warrant Hell in a Cell. And the other thing I wanted to call out was, it does make me a little laugh when everybody kind of says Hell in a Cell, and it's both a pay-per-view and an item, which is an odd item when you think about the title. But it's just that's how they all say it, similar with a specific cadence that always just makes me chuckle. When I kind of, the last couple of notes is Miz is injured, but I do like that he's still relevant. And I think that's a great opportunity for him to use one of his strong skill sets in his ability to talk, keeps him on TV, keeps people realizing who he is, how valuable he is, how good he is. And the last couple of times have been really great, just with Morrison letting him roll down the ramp or him forgetting about him because he was overly cautious. And it's simplistic, but yet works really well. I will say, you know, when he finally, you know, when he left him on the top of the stage and brought him down and Miz was on commentary, also a good spot for him. But that match with Morrison and Jeff Hardy was rough. I don't know if Jeff Hardy can continue to do it. I don't feel like he has I don't know if it's ability necessarily, but maybe it's physical ability, the energy, the whatever it is, to be that same high impact, high action character when he's I think it's clear that he just can't. And this match seemed all over the place. It seemed like they couldn't connect together. I think Johnny is, at this point in time, is way more capable in the ring. I just don't know if he can carry a Jeff Hardy. And I don't know if Jeff Hardy can really carry anybody else. So I'm hoping that if this is the wind down for Jeff Hardy, that it's done in a right way and that it also doesn't impact or get impacted by his personal issues. I didn't like when they brought his personal issues into the stories with Samoa Joe and Sheamus. I feel like it cuts too close to home. It's very similar to the Hawk situation where they brought in his substance abuse issues into the story. And I feel like that's too much. We still want to have some fantasy behind it. And especially a character like Jeff Hardy, when you talk about his substance abuse or his alcohol abuse, puts too much of a damper. It's not clever enough. It's the easy way out. So I don't know what's going to go. Obviously, him and Cedric Alexander are going to kind of have a thing. I don't know. I don't know if Cedric's too fast for Jeff. And that'll be like really, not complimentary, but so opposite that doesn't work. Because it's different when you have a small, fast guy versus a big, slow guy. But Jeff's not a big, slow guy. So I don't hold out a whole lot of hope for him. The last couple of things, I will tell you that I was impressed with the six-man tag with Omos, who finally got into the ring with guys more on his level in terms of size. And he really did impress me with what he's able to do. And I'm hoping that as he carries this belt, there'll be more opportunities like this to really put him in as a legitimate competitor with AJ Styles and not just the guy who throws people around and then waits for AJ to pin him. So I do hold out a lot of hope. However, I do not like impromptu tag matches. I don't like ones where you have two storylines that happen to bump to each other, so then they're going to put them in matches together. There's no fluidity. There's no there's no conflict. And it's this weird thing where it's like, you've never tagged with somebody before, so act like it. Act like you're not comfortable with them. You don't necessarily trust them. I will say that while I'm getting caught up on NXT, one of the examples was with Finn and Karrion Kross tagging, and that they had a common enemy and it's kind of okay. But in the end, an issue happened. It looks like Finn accidentally hurt Scarlett. And Karrion just loses his shit and goes after him. And at least that. There's some emotion behind it. There's some logic behind it. There's some proper interaction. But when you just have three guys tagging against another three guys, and there's no, it might as well not be in the same match, then I think that's losing it. And then obviously, too, when it's, they go to commercial break and now this match is happening. And it just doesn't, I get it. It's to get more people on TV and to push storylines continuously. But it's just, it's not something for me. So I don't think it ever will be. I do, though, get a kick out of people who are wrestling against each other in a storyline who end up are forced to tag and then end up being tag team champions. I do find that really clever and really worthwhile. And you've seen it before. And every once in a while when it happens, I like it because you can really create or you can really develop the hatred between two people or change them or whatever the case may be. You can do a lot with it, just not when it's after the commercial break, all of a sudden there's a magic tag. All right, so that wraps up WWE for the moment. Like I said, I'm going to come back on Saturday and talk a bit about Hell in a Cell more specifically, which ones I'm looking forward to, which ones I'm not looking forward to. Got to play both sides. And kind of predict some winners. I don't necessarily want to go match by match. I may if it's easier. I just don't know if you want to listen to me going, match one, this person versus this person. I think this person will win. So we'll see how it goes. It'll be my first side of quo as it relates to pay-per-view. So I may end up doing that anyways. But after the break, we are going to continue with I and how I get caught up in my NXT. So please stay tuned. Please hold for the 7 seconds until the next segment. Thanks. Thank you once again for sticking around. I hope you enjoyed my WWE segment. And just a reminder, in case you're just starting this now, I will have a Side of Poe special show coming Saturday before WWE's Hell in a Cell, giving my thoughts and reviews and predictions on what's going to happen. So now we are talking NXT. If this is your first time listening, I am severely behind in my NXT, so I have started watching it at the return of Finn Balor to NXT. And I'm watching as much as I can, but not wasting that opportunity and really actually watching and following along. So at this current moment, I have managed to get myself caught up to TakeOver Stand and Deliver. I think it's what it's called. It's the WrestleMania TakeOver. So I managed to get myself caught up to this, what is that? April, May, June. Almost 3 months left. So I am definitely getting myself up to speed. Unfortunately, sometimes as a result of cross-advertising or whatever the case may be. I do know a little bit what's happening in the current space in NXT, but I'm trying not to look into it further and really just allowing myself to be surprised when everybody else was surprised when they watched it. So I will say that I will hold off on what I've seen so far of NXT TakeOver, Stand and Deliver, and just wait until that's done before I kind of talk it through. I will preface this, I do like the two-night events, and I do like that WrestleMania was two nights. It's less taxing on a viewer to sit there and watch 6 hours. If you give them 3 hours and give them 3 hours, they can watch, they can be emotionally invested, you can manage their emotions more effectively, you can allow them an opportunity to rest, reset, and then bring them back into the emotional game the next night. And it's important. It's one of the most important things when you're watching the show. When you're emotionally invested, you need to carry those emotions. If it's supposed to be a blow you away match, great, you get blown away. But if you have them back to back, you can't, because an average viewer can't keep that up. They can't keep that full on the edge, super excited emotion. There's a dip. And so if you manage it more effectively, then the dips come expectedly and the rises come expectedly. And I think doing it over 2 days allows them to do that. So I'm assuming at some point in time next week, I will have caught up even more and I'll be able to kind of get more. But like I said, I am aware of some of the things that are going on, and so some of this is less of a surprising. So we have the turn, the ending of the Undisputed era. And so I saw that, I kind of talked about it last week, that this seemed like a swan song. And so sure enough, they've been really pushing Kyle O'Reilly, which I'm all for. And, you know, the enemy of my enemy is my friend. Eddie Kingston mentioned that on AEW a couple weeks ago. But it's true. In this case, Finn and Kyle have the same enemy in Pete Dunne. And then as a result, they have a mutual respect for each other. I think it also, in the story, they had two fantastic matches. And so I think that really helps too. But as a result, Adam Cole, always the opportunist, takes offense to that. And puts on his own super kick party. You know, it's a little bit shocking, but obviously because I already knew what was happening, it's less shocking. I would have liked to have seen, at one point in time, in one of the situations Kyle was in, the other three came in and started beating up on somebody, and I can't remember who it was, and Kyle seemed a little bit less okay with it. I would have liked to see more of that before we got to the point where Adam turns, but we're there. And I think it's a great opportunity to put the two against each other. There's enough there. They've kind of jumped a little into this with Adam's thoughts and feelings about carrying the team and this, that, and the other. It just seemed to get to that point really quickly. But that's also how NXT operates. They get ramped up real quickly with the storylines, and then they're off to the next. And sometimes it's fine. Sometimes it makes sense. You want to showcase two specific wrestlers, and the easiest way is to put them in matches together, and then you kind of move on from that. But in these kind of, Adam Cole is not leaving NXT anytime soon. Finn Balor is obviously not leaving NXT. Johnny, Tommaso, you have an opportunity to build these storylines out with these guys a little longer because they're not going anywhere. Whereas if you're try to hype a wrestler and then move them on, then you don't want them sitting around for too long. So, well, I think that there was opportunity to build up this storyline better. I'm all for where it is now. I think they'll both put on a fantastic event. And I think that also allows them both to be in a conversation and actually really jumps Kyle O'Reilly into that NXT Championship point of view or conversation, as opposed to making him sit in the North American Championship first. I do say it's like what happens to Roddy. And even it's awkward in these moments that he is trying to piece them back together or trying to make sense of it all. And he's really the guy left out. And I think that's been for a while, that Kyle and Adam have obviously really risen and he's kind of left to the side. So I know that he has left and he's not coming back. So I'm interested to see what they do with him. If they move him into more of a 205 Live, or do they bring him back in more how he was before? It's interesting. It will be interesting because NXT's superstars or their main eventers or their focal points continues to grow. And it's, where does Roddy fit in this, or does he? Does this the opportunity where Roddy moves on? Maybe he can, family permitted, maybe he goes over to NXT UK and offers a new perspective for them. But I guess I'll wait and see for that one. Kind of where I was at before I, after the end of last show, Vengeance Day was a really solid card. There weren't any weak matches. Everything was put together really well. Things flowed. The storylines made sense. The action was good. It's where I think it should be the goal of every pay-per-view. Not every pay-per-view is going to be a home run, and that's okay. Sometimes it's a matter of timing. Is your storyline built to the crescendo that this Hell in a Cell match is the end-all be-all, or is it that from a timing-wise that maybe Hell in a Cell isn't the one that you want to, you know, really send off on? Maybe it's something else. And so it's okay to not have a blockbuster pay-per-view. I think the way NXT does it shows that you can still put on a great show by just having solid matches all the way through. So I'm holding out hope for TakeOver Stand and Deliver that'll see the same idea, that it's more about the quality and less so much about the shock and awe. We did see the introduction of LA Knight, one Eli Drake. I know he was in the WWE system before, or whatever name it was, but am I a fan of LA Knight? Not particularly. Am I a fan of the wrestler? Absolutely. He was, when I first started watching Impact, and he was doing his dummy, yeah, with the button, and the, you know, the fake talk show, I thought that was really good. He really, really caught my eye. The way he carries the camera, the way he can just flow in his conversation. And I was really happy to see that instead of when he breaks out his name, Eli Drake, and he points, you know, very similar to the Can't Teach That, now he's doing it as the LA Knight, which is great. It's nice that he's able to carry that through. It really shows that he owns that character. It's the same thing with MSK in the one maneuver they do, where one does a backflip and the other one pushes him and he lands on the wrestler. So you still get to carry some of that character from before, especially when you know these wrestlers. And then he brings in, that's not an insult, that's just a fact of life, another classic phrase from him. Being able to continue to use it just really carries the same character through. Yes, it's got a new package on it. You're gonna improve it a little. You're going to make it a little bit bigger. But at the core, it's still him, and that's really where I feel like he excels. So I was super happy to see him there, and since then, I've seen him in some matches. Certainly in the, he does make sense to be in the North American Championship conversation at this point, because he's still new. Just like they're really pushing Bronson Reed. I'm not a big fan of him, but sure, I mean, that sense. And then the return of Cameron Grimes, but as big money Cameron Grimes. Sure, how he got there is a bit of a stretch. I think, you know, it is what it is. But at least point, it's making sense. It's great television. He's getting to the point where you have... he's just comedy. He's pure comedy, yet in the ring, and the million-dollar... basketball stunt was funny, and I think that's really, really excels. And it's interesting because he's way different than the Trevor Lee from Impact. And so it's great when you can see these wrestlers really expand in their horizons and their capabilities. So he's going there. But some of the other ones, like another guy who's really versatile is actually Johnny Gargano. He does play, you know, the face of the NXT. He is a man of the people with DIY and all this other stuff, and it worked really well. And then when he flips to the other side and he is this villain, he does it really well too. And I think because he knows where his place is. Where does he excel most in either side? And there's some people who just can't do that. They overdo it or it just doesn't make sense. So he's done a really well job. The way I'm a little hesitant on really selling it, I don't like the fact that they've turned Austin Theory, not that I was a big fan of him, but he's turned some dumbass, which is unfortunate. Because I think that there was a way of doing this where they're stronger. He's to be feared instead of turning him into a small child. It just doesn't. It's weird for me. It doesn't make sense to me. The indie wrestling, if you want to call it that, she's very much an afterthought. amongst these four. I know that at some point down the road, it's going to change, but at this point in time, I'm only talking about right now. Now, speaking of factions, whatever you want to call them, I was thinking about whatever happened to Pat. Where's Pat McAfee? After that War Games, I hadn't seen him, and he was supposed to be carrying this trio, and they stayed together, and I was wondering where Pat was, and then all of a sudden he showed up on a plane, and I'm assuming it's scheduling and all that other stuff, but I wonder, did that make sense? Did it make sense to have him as the fourth person in the War Games, or could you have somebody else that could still carry this foursome as they go forward? You know, as they start to define their own matchups, you have Pete Dunne going against Finn Balor, you have Oney and Danny who are going and having their own, you know, storylines, which works because even though they're together and they help each other out, in the end, they still have opportunities on their own. I don't know where Pat fits anymore, and it just seems like a kind of a wasted opportunity. I do know that there's a return of a particular favorite of mine from the main roster back to NXT. I don't know yet what's going on with Samoa Joe. It's just, it popped up on my newsfeed, so I can't help it. When I look at some of the other kind of storylines, I kind of forgot. The takeover intro between Adam Cole and Kevin Owens, Kyle O'Reilly, KO Jr., I thought was really well done. That's one thing that, as I've said with the Xia Li, that NXT specifically put some great packages together that really tells the story for people that don't necessarily watch every episode, but they can really get the emotional side of it there, and they're instantly invested in whatever the story is. So I applaud them for that. When I look at kind of the other things that kind of led us up to this, the women's tag belts come in. It makes sense to me to split them out. We never really utilized, I own the company or work for them. They never utilized the ability to move between promotions that often. I'm assuming that with the current landscape and how they were operating, that mobility or opportunity was really limited. So by splitting them out, it just gives them an opportunity. I think it was perfect to have Dakota and Raquel as your first time champions. Whether it was okay at the time to make them lose the belt right away isn't either here nor there. At least they're a tag team, and they are a unit together, and you have Shotzi and Ember who act like a unit together. Those as champions make sense to me as opposed to just two random people. You do run into a problem, though, as when Raquel and Dakota were fighting for the women's title against Shayna and Nia, you've somehow turned... And it's the opposite of when when I said putting Kofi and Xavier versus Randy and Riddle. When you take two heels and put them together, you start to push one of them into the positive side, and the fans can, because they're NXT crowd, will get behind the NXT people, which is understandable. But then how do you turn around and flip them back? So it's and this maybe that was the way to do it, by having your ultimate baby faces win over against your former heel, then it brings everybody kind of back to leveling, so that would make sense to me. But in the end, I do agree with the fact that you have their own tag team, you have their own opportunities, and I think there's enough second tier women that are teams. So if I look at Casey and I'm going to call her Katie because I can't think of her name off the top of the head. They're a definitive tag. You have these definitive tags where you can make it work, as opposed to, we don't have enough people, we're going to have it anyways. And I think that's where you have the WWE women's tag is more along those lines. So there's lots to do here. Looking forward to it. It's also an opportunity to bring up your newer people into this stage where you can put them in against tags and build up from there. The other person, though, I'm concerned about in this state is Io Shirai. She is slower to the learning English game, or at least it seems that way, than Asuka. Yes, at times when Asuka gets going, she stops speaking English, and so you don't really know what she's saying, which, yes, subtitles would be great, but it I don't think it's really the point. I think you're conveying what she's trying to say with the way she says it. I just, with Io... And the people that are competing against Io have a lot to say. And her English isn't at the same level, so I feel like you miss a little bit of the back and forth. I wonder if that would be perhaps what's prohibiting her from moving into Raw or SmackDown. She is one of those people that I think would excel in the Raw or SmackDown because her persona, her abilities match well with all various types of performance, and so she could easily integrate herself in there and it would make sense. Sure, you could pair her with Asuka, if you know, another Kabuki Warriors or whatever it is, but you don't need to. But either she needs someone to talk to her for her in order to really push to the audience that isn't familiar with her, or she needs to figure out how to step up so that she can really push other wrestlers instead of just being the champ. Because now she's the champ, she's involved, she doesn't have to say anything because she's the champ. Take the belt away from her, put her in a new environment, how well is she going to flourish without being able to sell her story? And the sad part is, it's reality. WWE is predominantly built around English-speaking wrestlers, English-speaking fans, and so yes, you can take other languages and really make it work, but when your largest audience and you're the audience that really makes the company move is English speaking, there's got to be a way for her to get to that point if they still want her to be the top of the top in terms of women. Some of the other things that's kind of irks me a bit, I will say, is I'm over Leon Ruff. He's in this current dispute with Swerve, who I'm not really a big fan of. And I feel like Leon Ruff is what they've made Nikki Cross, that same similar character. As I said before, I don't like that. But Leon Ruff doesn't fit. He's not believable in this, can really compete. And I don't know if it's the look, because he weighs 9.5 pounds, or it's just his skill set. Whatever the case may be, he's kind of the annoying guy, and I don't know if that's intentional. And I don't know if he's fitting with Swerve Scott because they want to keep Swerve but don't really have a place for him. But I say move on. There's other wrestlers to take up time that could be much more effective than the Flash in the Pan, which is fine if he's a Flash in the Pan, and that's it. It's like if you got two fists, there's always a fight. When James got involved with AJ Styles and they did the same thing, and then it just carried on. And then when they attached him to Camilla, it was like, okay, we're done. James Ellsworth is who I meant. But let's move on from that. And I think Leon Ruff is in that same situation. There's other wrestlers that should be more involved in these storylines than him. The other one I find is odd is Tommaso Ciampa. I miss the old him, the old Real Blackheart, where he was the bad guy. And I think you face challenges when you do a character so well that people start to appreciate it and they like it. I got to think it's one of the hardest things to do in this day and age is be a proper heel, because people are so anti-establishment. They love the anti-hero, that when you have a bad guy, and I don't mean like in terms of his persona, that people get behind it and they slowly start to turn them. And if you don't make the story right, they turn them all the way around. And since he's come back from his surgery, and I'm assuming this has his family has a lot to do with it, his priorities and such, that he's definitely changed. And now he's like old man dad who is wrestling these degenerates, these kids from the neighborhood that are causing all sorts of trouble. So it's really odd, especially because he's growing out his hair and some of the stuff he says. So I definitely miss old him. And I did enjoy the stuff between him and Timothy Thatcher. And then now that they're, I don't want to say friends, it's kind of like the bar where they have a mutual understanding and a mutual respect that they've gained, and now they work together. They're just not, the bar worked really well. And so I just don't know if they're there or if that's going to stick or what's that's going to happen. But in the lead-in to where he's at his match now, which I have actually I'm in the middle of watching, which is him versus Walter and how that's going to come. But Walter is somebody that I thoroughly enjoy, and I think he is like Baron Corbin, he is the perfect heel. Because you're not going to like him. It's not going to happen. I love him, but I don't love him in the sense that I'm going to root for him. I love the character he portrays, and I love that he is all in with it. Unless there's some big bad guy that comes up, Walter will always be the bad guy. It works so well. Imperium is a great group to keep in the mix, keep in that pure heel smugness, anti-American without really coming across as anti-American. So like that really works. And Walter being the head of it makes perfect sense. It's unfortunate that Alexander Wolf is gone. I don't know yet how much further he was in plans with them. Right now, he came on a show when the other two, Fabian and Marcel, came to regular NXT, then he disappeared again. So I'm not entirely sure what's going on. But with Walter showing up, he offers a new opportunity for guys to come against him. He's from NXT UK. He's the NXT UK champion. He's been champion for like over 2 years, 700 something days, I think is what I was reading. So almost 2 years. Like, so clearly he is the guy, and so it works out well. I will say that in the lead up, when Tommaso was kind of saying, hey, you're disrespecting us, and I think Timothy Thatcher disappeared or whatever the case would be, his chop on Tommaso and every other chop I've seen, I don't know how these guys can sell it without actually selling it, as in it actually happened. I feel like if I took a shot from him, I'd shit myself immediately. The snap, the impact, the mark, the whole thing is just so insanely incredible. I would never want to be the person who takes that. I think that's part of the appreciation for these wrestlers, these athletes, that they can take something like that and really just carry it through. In terms of a spoiler, that's not really a spoiler. It's a spoiler for me, I guess. The slap happiness of him and Tommaso is pretty awesome. So I'll have more of that next week when I've really finished watching both nights. So that's our kind of are with NXT. I will get caught up. I'm slowly, but at the same time, it's quickly getting myself done. I think I've done a great job. I pat myself on the back that I've got up, caught up like a year and a half in a couple of months. So I'm excited to get to the point where every Tuesday night / Wednesday morning, it's fresh with me. There's no ruining of storylines because I don't know what's going on, and neither does anybody else. So I'm really looking forward to that. I'm looking forward to see what happens with Samoa and some of these other things that I know are coming. But I'm all on board, and I'm looking forward to it. All right, that wraps up NXT. I'm going to take a break to ease my voice a little, as I can feel like it's fading. And then when I get back, I mean, you guys won't notice, it'll be like very short, as the usual 6 seconds, as I say. Then I'll break down a little bit of the AEW, which I'll cover just last week's, because it's going on tomorrow night, and I won't be able to talk about it until next week. So that's coming up after the break. Please stay tuned. Please stick around. I would greatly appreciate it. I'll be back. All right, I am back, and it is AEW time. Now, I know that AEW is rolling their Dynamite shows on Friday nights because it is not necessarily to match up directly with SmackDown, but more that it's the NBA is taking up that time. So they'll move back to their regular Wednesday slot at some point in time, and they'll do the Friday show, which I'm intrigued to see how this is going to work out. But anyways, so one of the things that caught my attention, and I've mentioned this before, is Platinum Max. And I looked at him as, I don't know, I don't really know how I started out with him, but I was, you know, the rapping thing was whatever, until I started to understand and learn about who he's talking about, who these wrestlers are, and things like that, and to actually hear him and what he spits out. And a lot of it is super clever. And I was like, okay, well, is it really freestyle? Because he's kind of, he's gone in the back, and who knows. But then he was on TMZ, and I'd actually shared this video on Twitter, and it was honestly awesome. The way he referenced Buff Bagwell and some of the other wrestlers he referenced, and just how smooth it was, how it all made sense. It was all cohesive. And now I really look forward to when he comes out, what he's doing on the mic. I have to the jury's out on his in-ring skills for me. I still haven't really watched enough of him to kind of have an honest opinion, but as my skills for by far step him up to where it should be in terms of what he can do, what he can say, how he can move storylines, or how he can move people's feelings either way. So I think that, you know, it's a big bonus. It's a nice thing to have on the side, and I think it helps. TMZ has such a strong relationship with WWE. I think it helps AEW that you have situations like this where people, because I read TMZ, I love TMZ, but I also follow wrestling. And if you have other people that don't follow wrestling but do follow TMZ, there's a way of crossing promotions or crossing media that allows you to not necessarily garner full-on new wrestling fans, but at least they get interested. And if they get interested, then they might be willing to watch. And they might be willing to watch, they might enjoy it. So I'm definitely all on board. I'm really excited to see where else he can take this and how far you can push it. Because I have noticed, and I appreciate that AEW pushes the boundaries a little more. So not to say that they're going out and saying some ridiculous things or something totally inappropriate, but they don't let it control the flow of that conversation, the flow of those interactions. So plus one every time once in a while, then when they say a swear word, it just has more punch to it. So again, I'm all on board. Some of the other matches that came across, Evil Uno versus Miro, thought was a great match. I like Evil Uno. I love watching him when he came to town. Hopefully he will come to town again with Stu Grayson. I mean, granted, he's from the area. Super nice guy. Personal note, don't mean to name drop, but it is reality. So obviously for those two, such nice guys, you want to see them successful. This was a great opportunity to showcase him as a standalone wrestler and kind of as the leader of the Dark Order now that Brody Lee has unfortunately passed. So these are opportunities for him. He put on a solid match. Again, it shows the Miro that should be there, the dominant Miro that he really should own the ring. And at some point in time, he will move into the championship space. I just don't know when. I don't know if it makes sense right away or if you really let him own this TNT for a little while the top of the top gets kind of sorted out and trickles down into other layers. Like, you, not to say that you need to copy WWE, but in my opinion, it helps understand who is ones to watch in specific scenarios when you can kind of tier them out and get an understanding of who fits where. Is the TNT belt the stepping stone to the championship? Or is it just simply more like the X Division belt? I know there's the option C in Impact where they can go after the championship. But the idea is that you offer something different. You're offering a different product within your same organization that watching people deal with that other belt isn't just simply, oh, well, this guy's going to go after the major championship next. So it's nice. So I kind of hope that that's what they do with the TNT title. It is going to stick around when they move to TBS, which I appreciate the consistency, whether it sounds a little odd. But I do hope they start to keep doing your other people and offering maybe slightly different matchups and styles. And so you have a separate unit that you're focusing on. With that, I mean, you look at what happens with Jungle Boy and how he has a match with Kenny Omega, but really he probably fits more into the TNT title. I know he's, you know, come across those matches. I will not say what you want. I will not get behind Darby Allin being a champion. I just can't do it. If you had a cruiserweight title, I can maybe see it. But otherwise, I just can't do it. But I mean, when I look at Kenny, like, I'm still on the fence with him. I don't really understand where he fits. What kind of champion is he? I'm not familiar with his work in Japan as it relates to his out of the ring. So I don't know if this is kind of where he is. Normally, I'm so on the fence. I think Don Callis definitely doesn't help because he annoys the shit out of me. So I'm not sure that that's helping or hindering or that's supporting. I'll kind of let things iron out before I really get a solid opinion. And obviously that'll change as time goes on, as it does with various wrestlers. I used to hate Kevin Owens. I thought he was a giant dick when he first came in against John Cena. Over the years, I've started to really like him. He's one of my favorite wrestlers for a lot of reasons. And I kind of look back and go, oh, okay, that makes sense. Given where the time and the situation, it makes sense. So I don't know if this Kenny stuff is going to be the same way. Him facing Pac and Orange Cassidy, I don't really see them as the ones that he should be facing. But when I think about it, I haven't seen yet who really stands out as the true competitor. Who is the Drew McIntyre to AEW's Bobby Lashley? Like that kind of, these people are bigger, they're badder, they're stronger, they stand out more. And yes, it doesn't have to physically be bigger and badder. Rey Mysterio is a prime example. You know who Rey is. He stands out. He could be involved in any championship and it would make sense because of his skill set and his history. I just haven't seen anybody yet that really fits that bill for me. Again, because I haven't been watching it that long. But also, they're all still trying to find their footing. And we'll see, you know, where things go. But as I go back to Evil Uno, one thing that did come to my mind is that every once in a while, when Evil Uno is at a local show or on the independent circuit, Shitty comes. And Shitty is an interesting wrestler. I'm not entirely sure who Shitty is, if I want to be kayfabe. But he's kind of just a different character. Shitty. He's a dirty looking guy and he's just, you know, a different character all around. And I wonder if there is at some point in time, if we ever will see Shitty in an AEW ring, not to say that it would make sense or not. I just think it would be interesting. So who knows? You never know. Things can happen. As I was looking through, you know, watching some of the other matches, this wingman business, this other, crew, I don't get. I guess I'm assuming that on AEW Dark, it makes more sense. None of those wrestlers even interest me, especially Cesar Bononi. We'll never get on that train. I don't buy them as some sort of like sex symbol player kind of guy or whatever. I mean, he was sporting sunglasses the other night, as they were trying to convince, and for life of me, I can't remember who, to join them. It never made sense, and it won't ever make sense. So I just feel like that's another group that AEW doesn't need in order to maintain their roster. One other match was Hobbs and Brian Cage versus Adam Page, and I think number 10 is what his name is from the Dark Order. I'm not 100% sure. But the spine buster that Hobbs did was fantastic. I will say, and I'm probably definitely not in the majority in this, my two favorite wrestling moves are the spine buster and Randy Orton's power slam. Power slam because it's just smooth, and if you think of the room for error is so small because of how he's turning these guys over, there's a bit of a, you know, danger, so to say, but I just really like it. And the spinebuster, whether it's Carl Anderson's, whether it's Arn Anderson's, just, you know, some other ones are, I'm not as a big fan of, but I do love a spinebuster. And Hobbs's was massive to be able to catch the guy, really pick him up, and then really drive him to the ground, but all in that same motion. It was impressive. And I will always love a spinebuster more so than probably any finisher or any signature move. Give me a spinebuster, top of the list. So I do applaud Hobbs, and as I'm watching more, I'm really fascinated with what he can do, where he could go. Do I think that him being part of Taz's crew, you know, is neither here nor there, but he's somebody I've never heard of before. I'm not familiar with outside of this TV show. So I like that. It gives me an opportunity to really catch on, really focus, look forward to seeing where this person can go. And even with the small work he was doing with Christian, it made sense to me. And so again, I'm looking forward to that. If I look at Christian, though, him and Matt Hardy have kind of renewed old rivalries. And while I have noted before that I'm really not 100% a fan of bringing up WWE as a reference point, these are different, right? Because these guys kind of transcend what happened in other areas. Like, they're so iconic that I don't think you can get away with not referencing it, because they're just too big. And so I do applaud that, and I think that there is some potential to make this really interesting. I wonder, are they going to go extreme? You know, is that going to happen? Are we going to see that? If we saw a TLC match with them, it would be certainly interesting. Whether I think it's actually possible is a totally different story. But I like it. I'm definitely broken. Matt Hardy is one of the best things I thought came out of Impact. It's definitely one of my favorite things coming out of Impact. AEW, again, like a lot of bad things, just didn't fit, especially when you look at the legal stuff and not being able to bring it over. Also would never go to the extremes. There'd be no biting of ears. There'd be no Rebby playing the piano. There'd be no craziness out at the Hardy compound. So it doesn't really flow. I'm not a fan of this big money Matt necessarily, but there's that glimmer. There's those moments that really catch my attention and keep me intrigued as to what could happen. Christian and him have such good chemistry, have such good history, that there's a lot of things that can happen. I mean, a TLC match with them would be pretty crazy. I don't know what 40 plus years old, if it's something the two of them could carry. And I think the immediate comparison would be to anything else they've competed before. So it's a bit of a dangerous thing. Could be great. Could be disastrous. It's kind of the double-edged sword. But, you know, who never knows? There, things can happen. Crazier things have been done. And we'll go to see. The last thing I wanted to kind of point out as it relates to Dynamite was the continued... what's the right word? I guess rivalry is probably the best word to describe the Pinnacle versus the Inner Circle. I think that there is room in there to really move this along. There's lots of flexibility. I will say that the segment I enjoyed, I don't necessarily like the obvious, we're a tag team, so we're going to call out the tag team specifically. Then when I'm done, our second level guy is going to call out their second level guy, and then our big tough guy is going to call out their big tough guy, and then our leader is going to call out lead. That's a bit too formulaic, a bit too rigid. So I don't really like that, but at the same time, I don't know what else you would do. How else do you cut promos without having one guy speak for everybody? So the other option is you just have them speak in different promos at different times. So you might do a vignette of Santana Ortiz talking about Dax and Cash, I think is what they're called. I'll never get over them from Dash and Dawson. But you maybe have them separately. And so it at least carries that specific storyline, but not, okay, next person, even as they visually went like that, Sean Spears went off on his thing, which was nice because it kind of was like getting caught up in his emotion. But then they hand the mic to Wardlow. Wardlow says his thing, and then MJF starts. And so it just wasn't as natural as I think there's opportunities there. MJF is a fantastic heel. I know I talked before at the beginning or in other segments about Walter being a fantastic heel and Baron Corbin being a fantastic heel, that I respect them at heels and the work that they do, but I will never like them, as in root for them, cheer for them. They're put in a position where they can't. And that's important to have pure heels. Because kayfabe is out the window, you get to know these people on a more personal level as they open themselves up. And so you have a harder time hating them when you've really humanized them. But there's some people, you're still not going to like them, just the way they carry themselves, the way they interact with fans. And I think MJF is one of those guys. He has come to town before. He carries that same persona, that same dickishness, as a term I'm going to use. I'm making it up, but it's my term. It's my show. I can say what I want. And he carries that in his interaction with fans, and he really, really goes with it. And he does it so well that he is going to be in a very important piece to AEW for a very long time, regardless of that he's young. It's just that the skill set he offers is very hard to be matched by anybody else. His mic skills are fantastic. He can wrestle in the ring. He is, I wouldn't say necessarily he's the complete package, because I don't know yet if there is really anybody out there, but his mic skills are so strong and he has the physical abilities to back it up that it works really well, and he's totally an unlikable person. And one of the things he said in his promo, which it got me so good. And it was when he was kind of talking about Sammy Guevara and how, Sammy needs Chris to talk from. And he was like, I get it. I get that you would need somebody else to speak for you, because I wouldn't talk either if I had the speaking skills like Helen Keller. And yes, I mean, it's a bit rude to Helen Keller, but let's be honest, she's not going to know. Because she's dead, not because she's deaf and whatever. But it was just that, like, you take that reference, it's cold, it's heartless, and it's still funny. And it worked. And I really got a kick out of it. And I appreciate creative quotes, creative things to say. And I think that's, where Platinum Max comes in. But it's something that stands out. It gets your point across. It just makes you more of an asshole to people because you're mocking somebody like Helen Keller. And then Chris steps in, and then there's a good old car smashing. And I do love a good car smashing. I liked the car smashing more than I liked the bubbly attack. The car smashing was good. It really got the point across. Who doesn't love somebody taking a sledgehammer to a car, breaking windows, and then running the forklift through it? It's just, it furthers this story. And I feel like I missed something. Well, I know I missed something in how the inner circle has shifted from whatever they were, which is what I don't know, to this kind of biker gang type style, which matches up well with the guys wearing suits, upper class personas that the Pinnacle are giving. So it works very well. It's balanced very well. And obviously I don't know how the Inner Circle necessarily started out in getting to this, for its natural progression or whatever. But the fact that they go on demo a limousine just really cements where Pinnacle is in terms of status and where Inner Circle is in terms of status, and how the underdog, or whatever you want to call them, goes and fights the man and fights the top of the top and tries to take down the big guy. And so it somehow works. And I was really surprised, actually. I thought this was going to get tiresome and kind of run its course. But when you have promos like MJF's and you have these clever ideas that actually work, like forklifting a limo, it just carries things further. So I am certainly, at least for now, I'm still on this dispute, this feud train, and hopefully it carries through with some more innovative or fresh ideas, and then we'll go from there. One last thing I wanted to mention, AEW Games, their Twitter handle is pumping out information on their game that is done by the Ukes Group. I feel like I've mentioned this before, but my memory is shit, so I'm saying it again. They have recently released, Kenny Omega, who's kind of running that, has released footage of Darby Allin in his scanning, whatever his model is, and then a little bit of his in-game play motions. And I will tell you that I am quite surprised, because the initial video when they're talking about doing this AEW game was much more on the, I guess, cartoony side, more like, I want to say it was called WWE All-Stars, where they had a bunch of the old guys with the new guys, where it was not so much about the accuracy, but you could still identify. You could say, okay, I know this is Chris Jericho, and I know this is Kenny Omega. But this seemed a lot more straight-up competition with WWE. And I know a lot of people that I follow on Twitter and in those communities do enjoy building out the AEW guys, and they are, I would say, very critical of especially 2K20, which I get. But I think they're going to obviously will appreciate the AEW game. Whether they get to have the opportunity to create their own wrestlers and import them and share will be interesting to see. I don't know how you couldn't, because I think it is too much of a selling feature that people want that flexibility. But if it's something you're interested in, keep checking out AEW Games on Twitter. They'll keep releasing things. I have no idea when it's going to come out. I am a WWE game guy typically, because I have been for years, because it hasn't really been competition for me. The Impact games, I never watched Impact, so it didn't really suit my needs. But I am certainly intrigued. I have the Fire Pro Wrestling. In a previous season, I did a comparison. I don't really know how the game works. I don't really figure out how the game. It also is not digital, so I have to actually put it in, and I'm too lazy. But even watching videos of people that they put together, they were able to recreate events with the Ethan Page taking Darby Allin and throwing him into the crowd and at his brother. Like, they were able to recreate that within Fire Pro Wrestling, so I don't know how they did that, but I know there's potential out there. But this AEW game is definitely on my radar. If it's not overly expensive, if I look at videos, if I see people are really on board with it, then why not? Why wouldn't I increase my opportunities to do different things? And if that happens at the time, then I will certainly break down my review, give my opinions, dictate whether I think it makes sense or doesn't make sense to really spend the money now, or do you wait, or is it really just not a product worth getting, or, you know, whatever the case may be. So I'm interested. I'm hanging on board. I'll keep tabs and keep an eye on things. So that wraps up AEW for now. Dynamite's happening tomorrow night. So next week with the new episode, I will talk about the most recent AEW event and more along the lines of what their plans are for their live shows and anything else really that comes to my mind as I continue on my journey of AEW wrestling. So after the break, I'm going to wrap things up. So please hang on just a little longer, and I will be back to close out the show. The time has come. The end is near. In fact, it's actually here. Thank you so much for sticking around. A couple of last quick notes before we close things up. We talked about AEW video games in the last segment. WWE 2K has also released their own video showing you some of the motions for entrances. If it's something you're interested in, check it out. I'm invested, as I will certainly be buying the game. So at some point in time, I will supply a wish list of things that I would like to see. There's lots of them out there, so I do look at them for ideas, but in the end, I know what I would like to see. So I'm sure I will share that to you, and then when the game comes out, I will certainly provide a initial thoughts, initial look, whatever the case may be, and then I will do a more comprehensive one after I've had a chance to play for it a little bit, just to kind of let you know if it's worth buying and at what point in time in the life cycle of a video game should you be picking it up. So stay tuned for that. It's in October, a little ways away. If you like card collecting or collecting of any general and you like wrestling, Topps has a great card collecting game on either Android or Apple. It's free, so that's a big win. It's super simple to do. It's somehow fun. You spin a wheel every couple of hours to gain some cards and money. You get a pack of cards periodically throughout a day. There's also checklists of things you can accomplish and gains you more money. And then you just open packs of cards. They have different themes. They have different sets of cards. They have different opportunities, whether it's guaranteed common or uncommon cards, or you have to spend a little more of this fake money to get those. And there's still the hunt, right? Those people who like blind bags or Kinder eggs or whatever it is, where you buy something not knowing what's in there. This is another example. So it's really cool. There's a bunch of other Topps games, but I know I sound like a massive nerd, but I am. So if you like collecting, you like wrestling, check it out. And, you know, if it's something you're interested in, maybe check, you know, reach out and I will let you know what I have available and maybe we can make things work. So again, that's that. And the last piece is what I call the WWE interview stare. Where are they looking? Why are they looking off camera? Why is it that when an interviewer is done their segment or a wrestler leaves impromptu, they just stare into the distance? Makes no sense to me. But it's been doing it for years. And so I'm always intrigued as to why, because it just seems odd to me. Not enough that I really want to go into the deep dive into wherever it's, however it happened. I'm sure at some point in time I will come across it or somebody will tell me. But it's just one of those things that I've always noticed is just such an odd thing to produce. I mean, I could stare off into the distance right now, but you can't see my face, so it really doesn't make a whole lot of sense. I digress. Once again, though, Hell in the Cell is coming up Sunday, June 20th. Saturday, I will produce a Side of Woe. It's what I call my bonus episodes. Just breaking down as a preview for Hell in the Cell. Not sure yet, depending on how it goes, if I'm just going to go match by match or if I just want to highlight. We'll see how it goes. But I can't do that until Friday SmackDown because that will carry storylines into the pay-per-view. And then after, either during our regular cast or I might do another special segment, I'll kind of give my thoughts and opinions on how the pay-per-view went. So, for those out there, happy Father's Day, which is coming up on Sunday. I hope you have either a great time with your kids or a great time with your dad or a great time being away from your kids. However it is you like to celebrate Father's Day, I hope you have a great one. That's it for me. I will catch you guys all on Saturday. And if you don't listen to Saturday's show, then I will catch you all next week. Once again, this is the Po Show, the PWO Show, the Pro Wrestling Outsider Show. This is Kyle. Have yourself a good time. Thank you.